new topic. We spoke the last couple of weeks about the halakha of tefillah, in terms of the requirement of tefillah, and the difference between the bizmano, and the yom, and the laila. Now we begin to discuss some of the preparations that are necessary before a woman goes to the mitzvah. So the sugya begins on page 37. Top page 37, introduce the concept of chafifa. So before we get to chafifa, we have to talk about something else very, very quickly. That's the topic of chatzitza. It's just totally coincidental to what it's rhyme. They have a lot to do with each other, but they do have totally different words. What is chafifa? What is chatzitza? Chatzitza means that when a woman, or for that matter, anybody goes to the mikvah, so they have to make sure that there isn't any separation, there's anything that's separated between the body and the water. We're going to hopefully talk about it as we go on, about what the details of chatzitza are, whether chatzitza is their ice, whether chatzitza is their abonon, what is chatzitza, what is not chatzitza. But in order to prevent some of the issues of chatzitza, Chazal instituted what's called chafifa. Chafifa is the preparation beforehand, the washing, the bathing, the combing, we'll talk about in a moment what precise they are, in order to make certain that there is no halachic problem of a chatzitza. So the sugya begins on the top of page 37. The Gemara Bava Kama, the Pebez and Alf, a strange place for a sugya of chazdita to begin. But the reason why it begins here is that it's talking about different takanos that Ezra made. The Gemara is talking about all different series of different dinim derabanan that were made at different times in history. The Gemara lists off the 10 takanos of Yeshua ben Nun, which are more Bavakam oriented, and it speaks about the 10 takanos of Ezra. Ezra takanos, Asara takanos in Ezra. So some of the takanos include Shekar b'mincha b'Shabbos, the fact that we lay in Shabbos mincha, that was part of the takanos of Ezra. Shekar b'mincha mishi, the fact that we lay in on Mondays and Thursdays, so the Gemara qualifies that by saying that takana had been around even before the days of Ezra. Ezra just boosted it up a little bit. It means originally the takana Moshe Rabbeinu, to lay on Mondays and Thursdays, was perhaps just to lay in the three psukim, maybe one aliyah, whatever the details are. And then Ezra put it into the format that we have today of three aliyahs with a minimum of 10 psukim. V'dana b'shem v'chamishi, and then he was Masake in that. That we judge court cases, the Beis Din sits on Mondays and Thursdays. Mechafsim chamish b'Shabbos. The fact that they're supposed to do one laundry on Thursday. The reason why Ezra Dafka didn't want people to do the laundry on Fridays because the laundry was a whole day affair in the olden days. So it's going to detract from Kavod Shabbos if you spend the whole day doing the laundry. So he wanted to make sure people like clean clothes, make sure they wouldn't wait till the last minute. They would do it Dafka on Thursday. Well, it's given right, it was mine as ever, the wash machine, so we don't have to be so mocked with the Lordy Davka on Thursday anymore. And then a few others, Bachon Shum Erev Shabbos, eating of garlic on Friday night, so the comes Ezra, that a man should eat garlic on Friday night. The Gemara says it's Mar Bezera, so that'll perhaps assist them in terms of Friday night. Shtei Isha Mashkemis Ve'ofa, that a woman should get up early in the morning, she should be baking. Shtei Isha Chagiris Vesinar, a certain halacha of tznius, that a woman should dress in a certain manner, as in heightened level of tznius. And the one that interests us now is Shtei Isha Chafevis Ve'tevel, that a woman should do chafifa, she should bathe herself, clean herself, comb her hair, whatever the details of chafifa are. She should make the appropriate preparations before she goes to the mikvah. So if you just read the Brayse Kipshuta, it sounds like until the days of Ezra, nobody was checking themselves, no one was cleaning themselves. Everyone was just going to the mikvah like that. So the Gemara says, "Why are you talking about the next same Marmokom?" Asks the Gemara, "V'hashti isha chafevus v'tevelas deraisi." What are you talking about? It's a dimin haTorah that the woman has to clean herself before going to the mikvah. It's the sign of the Brayse. The Torah says that you have to make sure that there's nothing separating between your body and the mikvah. So obviously, you have to make sure that it's clean. So even before Ezra's days, women were obligated to clean themselves before going to the mikvah. Then the Gemara just quotes off the rare instead of rice, es besaro, es atofel besaro, mani yuseya. And included in the din of tefillah b'mikvah, it's not only do you have to tovel your body, but you have to tovel your hair as well. I would have thought that there's no mitzvah to tovel your hair, but you have to tovel your hair for it says b'saro. So the word es comes to include seir as well. So the bottom line is, do you require to clean yourself before or not? So it sounds like when a Torah you should be required, otherwise you have a concern of chatzitzas. So what does the Brayse mean when it says that Ezra instituted it? So all you have to do is just take a look. It's called Iyun de'alma. You just have to look, you just have to see that unless there's anything wrong. So minatora, you don't have to sit the bed, you don't have to take a shower, you don't have to come here, all these grandiose preparations that women do bizman hazeh. Minatora, the preparation for going to the Rosh Hashanah, take about a second, said no, it's any major spots here, no major dirt over here. So that's okay, at a level of the Raisa. And Ezra's Masaka, that's not enough. That you have to make an extra special formal chafifa, whatever that means. You haven't still defined what that is yet. You have to make a formal chafifa above and beyond what the requirement of Minhag Torah would be. So that's the two different stages, two different requirements. It's called Iyun. Iyun, that's on the level of the Raisa. And then it's chafifa, which is an additionally required on the level of the Rabbah. So it's interesting when the Gemara speaks about the din deraisa of Iyun. So the Gemara says deraisa the Iyun do make, you have to check to make sure nothing is knotted up. Nothing is knotted up. That's talking about the hair. It's not even talking about the body. Binami shemiyos. Maybe there's something that's messy there. So that sounds like it's a continuation of the previous statement. It sounds like you have to check your hair. So it sounds like the Gemara is concluding that the din deraisa of Iyun only refers to one's hair, doesn't refer to the rest of the body, which is rather strange, because on the body, that's the original din of tefillah. That's the real din of tefillah. There's also a din of Torah, you have to tevel your hair also. So why does the braisa only focus on the hair, not on the body? So that's the machlokes in Rishonim. So Rabbi Tam is quoted by Rishonim saying, the reason why the Gemara speaks about the hair, and that's the real din of chafifah. The real Takanas Ezra was not on the body, it was only on the hair. Why? Says Rabbi Natan, what are the odds you can have some major chatzitza on one's body? Highly unlikely you can have a chatzitza on the body. We haven't even spoken about what the issues of what constitutes a chatzitza and what doesn't. The Rebbe says a little bit later on that in order to constitute a chatzitza on the level of the raisa, two conditions have to be. The Rebbe says that the details of the chatzitza are halacha moshe mesinai. The Gemara lumps together three different areas of halacha that were halacha moshe mesinai. One is shiurim, chatzitzin, and mechitzin. How do you know? Kedayis, kibetzah, da'arabis, tefillah, all those things that we have, avilchus, shiurim, where did they come from? Someone says this was pure ish repish halacha moshe mesinai. How do you know the details of mechitzas? How do you know when you build a mechitza? So you can build a mechitza at 10 tefachim, and it goes up to the sky, and you have breaks of lava, and all these details of mechitzas, and then sukkah, you have details of dofen akuba, all kind of these seemingly arbitrary halachas. Where do they come from? Chazal made them up. So the Gemara says these are all pure ish b'pish halach b'sh sinai. Then the Gemara says chatzitzin also are halach b'sh sinai. The details of the chatzitza are halach b'sh sinai. What does that mean? The Pesukim, the Pasuk says, you can't have a chatzitza. So the Gemara says, no, the details of what is a chatzitza and what's not a chatzitza is halacha moshe mesinai. What are the details of Minhag Torah? So the halacha moshe mesinai was that two conditions have to be met in order to be a chatzitza deraisa. It has to be rov, it has to be at most of the person's body, it has to be a davar habach, but it has to be something that the person is not happy with and really is going to go run to remove it. Say a woman just went mudsliding, so she's covered with mud from head to toe, and she's very upset about it. She says, you know what, before I go take a shower, I have to go run to the mikveh first. I'll go to the mikveh first, and then when I come home, I'll take off all the mud. So that would be chatzitza deraisa. Short of that, you wouldn't have a deraisa. So suffice it to say that we probably never, definitely never, have any real chatzitza deraisa. I'm sure going to go to the mikveh with a head to toe full of mud. So our chatzitzas that we have today are chatzitzas b'derabbanan. Why is that? The Gemara says in Chazal made a gezeira that if you let people go to the mikveh, even with small chatzitzas, you're going to end up potentially violating the din deraisa. So therefore, Chazal goes there, even on a mura machbid, gezeira atu ruba machbid. Min haTorah, it has to be a rov machbid in order to pose a problem. Min derabbanan, even if it's a mura machbid, even if it's a small amount, but it's something that the person wants to remove, that would be a problem. So therefore, let's say a woman goes to the mikveh, she has something on her body that she's not so happy about. She wants to remove it, and she's going to remove it later. And tomorrow she's going to take it off. So that would pose a problem. That would invalidate the tefillah. It's not a din chachil, it's a din b'dieved, that the tefillah is not acceptable on a level of derabbanan. It's not a sakaris anymore. Because in a Torah, the tefillah was valid, but it's an issa b'derabbanan to be together because the tefillah was disqualified on a level of derabbanan. That's if it's a miyot hamakbid. So that's what we deal with b'zman hazeh. If it's a miyot she'eino makbid, then it's not a problem at all. Not min haTorah, not min derabbanan. So 99% of the shahs and chatzitza is just simply to determine, is this called a davra machbid or not called a davra machbid? So we'll talk about this hopefully as we go on to this chatzitza a little bit later. How do you determine? What standards do you use? So is a ring called a davra machbid? Or a contact lens is called a davra machbid? A stitch is called a davra machbid? Is a bandage called a davra machbid? Is a cast called a davra machbid? So you have to figure out machbid when, how long, what's called akbar, you akbar, something else is akbar, there's a lot of dinim, there are details in halacha. How do you define that principle called a davra machbid? So that's all of the chatzitza revolves around that one word, that one phrase, davra machbid. So Rabbi Natam says that to have a real bona fide chatzitz on your body is so unlikely. So therefore, they never gave, even required chafifa. That wasn't the tekon of chafifa. What was the tekon of chafifa? Ezra was misakeh that the hair is very likely to be chatzitzes. People don't, people's hair gets knotted up, and the hair gets knotted, that's a potential chatzitzes problem. People's hair gets dirty, you know, we're used to this idea of bathing every day. So that was not exactly the practice in the days of the Gemara, not exactly the practice of the religious for Shonat. So people were mamish was significantly dirtier than they are today. People's hair was much dirtier than it was today. So Ben Tam says, therefore Ezra made a special takana that before a woman goes to the mikvah, she's got to make sure the knots are out of the hair, make sure the dirt's out of the hair. That was the takana. To wash the body, when you wash the body, for the body, so you take a look quickly, well, what's the need? With the rice of eel, you take a quick look, there's nothing there. What could be wrong with the body? The hair, first of all, it's hard to see your head. Unless you have a mirror, it's hard to see your own hair. Even with a mirror, it's hard to see. So you got to really, really scrub, you got to really, really comb, you got to really, really brush to make sure that there's nothing there, neither a chatzitza nor knotted up, which is also a chatzitza. So that's a bit of Tam's version of what the takana of chafifa was. And other Rishonim disagreed. So other Rishonim quote the name of Rashi. We don't have it explicitly in Rashi. One of Rashi's Talmidim, Rabbi Shemaya, quotes from Rashi. No, you have to mamish bathe, you have to shower, you have to do something to be a real bona fide washing the entire body off to make sure that there's no chatzitza on the entire body, and that's all included in the takana of chafifa. At the end of the day, there's not much of a difference between Rashi and Benetam, because the Tosfos writes that even according to Benetam, it is strongly recommended, and it is the Minhag Yisrael, Tosfos writes, that women bathe before they go to the mikvah. Even though according to Benetam, maybe you can argue all they have to do is the hair, but Lamais, the Minhag Yisrael is that women do wash their entire bodies, and they should continue to do that Minhag. So Tachlis, practically, a woman going to the mikvah, whether she's going Rashi standards or Benetam standards, at the end of the day, she's doing the same thing. She's doing the same combing the hair, the same scrubbing the head, she's doing the same scrubbing the body, everything is the same. According to Rashi, the whole thing is the Takana Sezer, and according to Benetam, half is Takana Sezer, half is Minhag Yisrael. At the end of the day, it doesn't make the slightest bit of difference. So what does this mean, this bathing, assuming that bathing is either a din, like Rashi, or a minhag, like a Benetam, what exactly does it include? So in the Gemara, the Rishonim, they don't really speak about how to go about doing this bathing. So whatever you want to do, you bathe, you shower. What's the difference? It doesn't matter how the water gets in the body. As long as you get yourself all cleaned up, that would be okay. So there's a minhag that exists in many communities, including our community, particularly the Ashkenazi communities, that we insist almost like on a double chafifa, that the hair for sure you have to do, and then in addition to doing the hair, you have to wash the body. When you wash the body, so you have to wash the body in two different ways. You have to bathe, to sit in the bathtub, and you have to shower as well. So that has become the standard practice in all the Ashkenazi communities, that women do it's almost like a triple chafifa. Chafifa on the hair, that's for sure they have to do. That's the Ikar chafifa according to Benetam. Then they do chafifa on the whole body also, which is either according to Rashi, part of the Ikar Adin, or part according to Benetam, part of the Minhag. And then within the washing of the body, then they go on and they wash in two different manners. They wash it by bathing, and they wash it by showering as well. How long they have to sit in the bathtub. So it doesn't say, the whole thing it doesn't say in Rishonim, the whole thing. It doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch. So how long is the minhag Yisrael to sit in the bath? So Moshe writes that the minhag is a half hour. That's the minhag. That was the Masorah that the women have. I can't say Ishma Pish, that was the minhag. That's the minhag Yisrael. That women try to sit in the bath for a half hour before, as part of the preparation we're going to the river. It's not written in stone. And if she was sitting in the bathtub for 29 minutes and then the phone rang and she jumped out and she doesn't have to go to Tashlumin, it's close enough. It doesn't have to be exactly to the split second. But again, that should be the goal. The aim should be she should try to sit l'chachila in the bath for a half hour, then do the showering, then do the combing, whatever else is necessary. Bitaris chafifa. And whenever I say this, I'm always weary. Maybe I should turn off the tapes when I say this. I'll trust everybody. No one will repeat this in an inappropriate manner. I said, I don't know your wives have said this, but where did you find this number, this magic number, half hour? It's somehow half hour is the Shia for washing things, for cleaning things off. So you find the similar things in Uchus Malicha. The Gemara says in Maseches Chulin that before you kasher meat, the goal of kasher meat is the salt's going to get out all the blood. But the Gemara says that before you salt the meat, you have to wash the meat. You have to soak the meat beforehand. So how long do you have to soak the meat for? What are you soaking for? So the Mishnah say that, Tov Yud, maybe you're there, no? goes back a long time, right? Some Rishonim say you got to soak the meat to get the dirt off, because otherwise the salt won't be effective. Some Rishonim say you have to soften the meat, otherwise if the meat is too hot, it won't work. Some say you're washing the meat to get off the exterior blood. Different opinions in the Rishonim. What the goal of soaking the meat? With the Gemara's Mefer, you have to soak the meat before you begin to kasher the meat. So we have a minhag that you soak the meat for a half hour. That's where the minhag came from. That's the minhag. You soak the meat for a half hour. It's a shabbos soaking a half hour. Means what do you see? You see that's a shear bedava, a half hour. Rubik could cool of an hour. Really, the shear is to do an hour. Rubik cool. I don't know. The minig is that we soak the beef for a half hour. The minig is that you soak the woman sits in the bathtub for a half hour. So again, don't spread that comparison too far. But the idea is the same type of idea. That it's a hashar. It's just an approximation to try to make sure that it's done properly. But the Shulchan points out in the Sefer that since the whole bathing is only a minig anyway, it's not ma'akiv, and some of the Sephardic communities that don't even do it, so the Bani Shulchan writes that if a woman is stuck and she can't do it, so she can still go to the Mikveh. A woman shouldn't feel bad if she can't do it. Used to be studies out there, I don't know how I think these are older studies, I'm not sure there's any truth to this anymore, but there used to be a concern that sometimes a woman is pregnant, she has to go to the Mikveh anyway, sometimes she's staying in the middle of pregnancy, so it could happen that she has to go to the Mikveh when she's pregnant. So there used to be a study out there that it's not healthy for a woman when she's pregnant to sit in a hot tub for a long time. They thought that was somehow detrimental to the baby. I think in later studies they thought the whole thing was the Rambam Taylor, but again, not up to date with the latest studies. So within that world view that they thought that it was detrimental, so Bar Yashulchan wrote in a sefer, if the doctor say that it's not healthy for the pregnant woman to sit in the bathtub, so she shouldn't. So she doesn't have to sit in the bathtub for half hour. She should just take a shower and do her hair and just do what the Ikra did. So he writes that whenever it's dangerous, whenever it's unwise, whatever medically, whatever other reason, so then there's no need to be such a big pocket on this minig. The whole minig is only a minig anyway, it's not even a universal minig, it's not the end of the world. Sometimes you have this in other situations. Sometimes a woman finds herself in some bizarre place, she's going to the mikveh, some crazy out of town place, and she doesn't have access to a bathtub, but she doesn't have. So usually the mikvahs have a bathtubs, but sometimes she's going to the mikveh in some natural body of water, which is again, a whole other complicated story, which are good, which are no good. Sometimes she's not in the standard mikveh, sometimes she's going Friday night, she can get to take a bath. There's a lot of issues that come up, that sometimes the mice, she can't take a bath. So the boss can say she goes to the mikveh anyway. It's not the end of the world if she can't take a bath. But that's what the practice is.
Practically speaking, wouldn't a half hour bath add to a vigorous shower? Practically speaking,
what does it do?
Half hour sitting in the bathtub add to a vigorous scrubbing, yeah. Soaking shower?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure practically it does. I don't know. I'm not sure. The Gemara says that when a woman does her chafifa, so she has to be careful that she doesn't do a chafifa in a way that ends up causing more problems than solving. So we take a look at the second of the Maamar Kamos on page 37. The Gemara says, that she shouldn't do a chavifa, she's going to clean herself with some kind of a detergent, so she shouldn't use different kinds of things, neser, chol, sand, they use sand sometimes as a cleansing agent, other kinds of things to clean themselves, so these kinds of things can sometimes cause more problems. The neser, mishum the mikdaf, the chol, mishum the mesrach, it's going to get stuck in her hair, it's going to clump together her hair, whatever, again, I'm not holding by bathing procedures of the 300s in Bavel, but the bottom line is that nothing should be done that'll cause more problems than solutions. So some of the posts can raise the question, about the conditioner. How if a woman uses shampoo and conditioner, so maybe that'll create more of a problem. Why is that? Because some people really believe the commercials that tell you that, not that those people watch the commercials, but they heard the commercials that tell you that the conditioner somehow stays on. They'll show you that shiny hair, the conditioner stays on the hair for hours on end. If that would be true, that if mama stays on, that's at the end there, but Masha's there, that'd be a big problem. So you try to get all the dirt off, then you put all the conditioner on. So the whole thing is Barbara Taylor, that the conditioner's not there, and even if it's there, it doesn't matter if it's aloha, it's microscopic. It's hard for me to experiment, but if you would pull some hair, and you would feel, I just took a shower beforehand. I don't feel any. I think I used shampoo with conditioner. Shampoo was sitting in the shower. I used. I don't look for conditioner. But I don't feel any conditioner on my hair. So we assume that a woman can use whatever she wants. But there are some mikvahs that are not, but they won't put it in. They tell them not to use conditioner. Well, nice. And I don't think. I think the mitzvah of the bar mitzvah. There's nothing really there. So then the Gemara continues. Remember, Meir Mishpat that Rav Ishlo Sochav El Bechamin, that a woman can only do chafifa with warm water. Valo Betzayin, and she shouldn't wash up with cold water. Feel Bechamichama. The Gemara says that the cold water will somehow cause more problems. It's going to clump together the hair. Again, I don't understand the Matthias exactly, but the Gemara says the Pharisee, you shouldn't be scrubbing your hair with cold water. That's going to cause more problems than solutions. So again, whether we understand or don't understand the Matthias, tonight that's what Chazal said. After the Shulchan Aruch, the Chafif has to be done with warm water. So for us, that's usually not such a big deal. The days of Chazal, this was always a challenge because warm water, you had to cook up a pot of water in order to do a Chafif. The Gemara tells a story about when Shiloh, where the woman goes to the mikveh at a certain time, and they didn't have any hot water, they had to go find hot water, we usually don't have that problem. So it's very, very easy for women to do chafifa. But even Bizman Azeb, we have run into that problem. I've had the challenge more than once, about sometimes there's no hot water available, sometimes the woman comes to the mikveh, and the mikveh's water's not working. The boiler in the mikveh broke. So just not that long ago, I got a call from a mikveh, that apparently the mikveh itself, the bor tevil itself, was still warm. So it was still comfortable. The ice cold water is another story. The mikveh itself was still comfortable. But the mice, the showers and the baths, especially weren't working. It was just ice cold water coming out of them. So what do you do? So I said, you can't do your chafifa in cold water. The mice said, the fairies, you're not allowed to. So he said, you gotta go home. So you send the woman home. Let her go do chafifa at home. So I remember one time when we were living in Washington Heights. So there was a whole problem that many women like to do the chafifas at home, many women like to do the chafifas in the mikveh itself. And we'll talk about that in a moment, about the proper timing of chafifa. Either one is acceptable. So remember, it was a Friday afternoon that all of a sudden the boiler something went wrong with the water in our building in the Heights. And there were some women who had to go to the mikveh that night. So to go to the mikveh on Friday night, of course you have to do chafifa at home. You can't come Friday night, start taking a shower. So everything obviously has to be done before you. So the problem was, it was a frantic crisis that anyone had to go to the mikveh, so there was no hot water. So what do you do? So I said, you got to do things like the old style way of doing things, like back the way our grandmothers did it. Then you heat up a big pot of water, you fill up a bathtub with cold water, and you throw in hot water into the cold water, and try and have warm water. So you have to do it, you have to improvise a little bit. So that's the thing. Yeah, you should not be doing chafifa with cold water. It doesn't have to be boiling hot. But it has to be a warm water that, again, for whatever reason, should have caused more of a problem than it's coming to solve. The Gemara is a whole discussion, a very complicated sugya in Maseches Nida, in terms of timing the chafifa properly. What exactly is the issue in terms of timing the chafifa properly? So the Gemara says that there are two different models as to when chafifa should be done. Two totally different time zones, which we would think that chafifa should be done. So one model is to do the chafifa right away, right before you go to the mikveh. That would make a lot of sense. A woman going to the mikveh at 10 o'clock at night, so she should do the chafifa at 9:45. Why? That's going to cut down on any problems. If she does the chafifa 6 hours earlier, so she's opening herself up for her hair getting knotted again, and she's going to get more dirt in her body, more dirt in her hair. So obviously it would make sense that she should do the chafifa as close as possible to the tefillah. The Gemara says, on the other hand, there's reason to think that that's not such a good strategy. Why is that? There's a throwback that we spoke about the last couple of weeks. Obviously, a woman goes to the mikveh at night. We already spoke about why that's true, the Torah, the Rabbanu, the different reasons why women go to the mikveh, obviously, under normal circumstances, only at night. And at night, don't forget, at night, in the days of Chazal, it was very, very dangerous out in the streets. Even today, sometimes it's not so safe outside, but in the days of Chazal, it was very, very frightening to go out at night. So the mikvahs weren't literally mamash in the middle of town. Some of the mikvahs were on the side, out of the outskirts. We spoke last week about when the woman couldn't go to the mikvah at night because the mikvah was outside of the city gates, and the goyim would lock the gates at night. So the mamash couldn't go. She would get stuck sleeping out in the street the whole night. So going out at night was a dangerous thing, and especially the later you get, the more dangerous it gets. So Chazal were very concerned that the woman starts pachkul, doing a chafifa, right before she goes to the mikveh. She doesn't start. She knows she can't go to the mikveh until it gets dark. She's going to first start doing a chafifa 10 minutes before that. It's going to take a while. Whether she was sitting in the half-hour bath or not, it's still going to take a while until she combs, she brushes, until she braids, does everything. So by the time she gets to the mikveh, it's going to be 11:30 at night. So the later that it is, the more concerned we are for safety. But not just in terms of safety, that's going to interfere with the valid chafifa, because she's going to be nervous. Because So if you tell her that, don't start your chavifa till right before you go to the mikvah, she's going to rush the job. She's going to be so nervous. She wants to get finished quickly and get home safely. So we're afraid that she's not going to do a proper chavifa. So we have almost like contradictory considerations. On the one hand, we would like to push the chavifa off as late as possible, as close up to the mikvah as possible, to prevent any nuchatzitzas developing. On the other hand, if you tell her to do it late, so then she's going to end up doing a rush job. So maybe it's better to do it earlier. Let her do it when she has berevach. She'll do it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. She's going to the mikvah 7 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a big deal. She'll finish the chavifah and try to be careful and short. So which one would we prefer to do? So the Gemara quotes about like this. The Gemara says that there are svaras to say one direction and svaras to say the other direction. So it's a complicated sugi at the end of the Masechet Sidur, the Seventh Vav. And finally, when all the dust settles, Machlekes Rishon, not a great surprise. Which one do Chazal prefer at the end of the day? Hilchas is something, but it's not clear what the final conclusion is. So when all the dust settles, it's Machlekes Rishon, which one is the more important consideration? Are we more concerned with getting the Chafifa closer as possible? Or are we more concerned with there being a little bit more, calmer doing the Chafifa with a little bit more time? So Tzitzis quotes that at the end of the day, it boils down to Machlekes in Rashi and the Shiltas. Rashi assumes that the conclusion of the Gemara is that we'd rather have the chavifa done earlier rather than later. So we're willing to forego that little bit of a window, a little bit of a break between the chavifa and the tefillah, because to get it to be miyushevus, to get it to be calm and do it in a patient, with a diligent manner, let it do it earlier in the day rather than start doing the chavifa at night. And the Shiltus learns the exact opposite. Shiltus was written by Rabbi Chai Gaon, so he came hundreds of years before Rashi. The Balei Tosfos quote, the Rishonim quote, Rabbi Chai Gaon all the time. People didn't learn his sefer as much. It became Rabbi Chai Gaon became much more popular after the Netziv, because the Netziv wrote this monumental sefer, a three volume tremendous mammoth sefer on the going on along the lines of Shiltus. It wasn't really a sefer Shiltus, it's a sefer called Tarkula, but in the process he uses the Shiltus as a springboard for all the things that he wants to say. So the Netziv put the Shiltus back into regular popular, now people want to read the Netziv, so they read the Shiltus also. But the Rishonim, the Shiltus was a very, very popular sefer. The Shiltus was written like the shiur we give it to Mincha Ma'ariv and Shabbos. It was a halachic topic in the parsha. That's what the Shiltus was. It was written in Aramaic. It was written in the days of the Gaonim in Bavel. And it was written Kesed of the Parshas HaShavua. So these were the drushas that the Chai Gaon gave in Shul. So on the Parshas Emor, spoke about the Yom Tov. So it became, so it gives you a 20-line Shtilut Torah about the Parshas Emor. And Bahar B'chos, it said every parsha gives you a little bit of something. And at the very end, he gives you about Yom Tovim. So it's the same style that we use Bizman Hazeh. So in the Sefer Shiltus, so he reads the Gemara, different than Rashi. He preceded Rashi. He learns that the conclusion of the Gemara is that we much more prefer that she does the Chavifa later rather than earlier, and therefore we want to get as close to the Tevila as possible, and therefore she should dafka do it at night. As she's in a rush, she should slow down, she should calm down as best as she can, but we don't want to do the Chavifa too early in the day. So Machlekes Rashi, the Shiltus, what is the final word? How do we practice in this? What do we do? So the Poskim write that we have a combination of doing both. That we want our chafifas to be l'chatchil according to everybody. Bidiyev, and everyone agrees, if you did either one, you'd be yotzei. That's not a shayla. Ba'ad l'chafif would be good. Either way, these are l'chatchil. These are ways of being shayla. What's the most appropriate time for chafifa? Bidiyev, it would be good either way. So our practice is, and Rishonim already write, that our minig is that we do a little bit of both. That we recommend that women should start doing the chafifa later in the afternoon, still maybe on yom, to fulfill Rashi Shita, and then the chafifa should continue into the night to fulfill the din of chafifa properly, the chachila, according to the shiltas. This is all assuming that the woman has the leisure to begin by day and finish at night. Assuming the woman's not working, especially in the wintertime. So the maybe on yom ends at 4:30, sunsets at 4:30, she's still in the middle of a meeting, she's not coming home till 7 o'clock at night. So what do you want? So she can't, she can't. It's a l'chatchil, it's not the end of the world. So many of the women today have to end up relying on the shiltas. Maybe one could argue that even we're a little bit less concerned with Rashi's concern with Manazeh, women are generally driving to the mikveh, they're not walking to the mikveh late at night, it's not so late. In the olden days, 7 o'clock at night was very, she's not even home from work till 7 o'clock at night. Halavai, on a good night. So we try to ask the l'chatchil to do mivyot yom also, to be yotzei Rashi, but if you can't, the Poskim say that even a woman can do a little something. She should start the ball rolling a little bit. She should try to make it that she doesn't end up with too much going on at night. So that also solves a little bit of her problem. Some women have a minute, they try to cut their nails, maybe on your own, they try to do a little something, maybe on your own, whatever, take off their hat, whatever different things that they try to do, just to minimize the amount of time of the Khalifa that's done. But push comes to shove, if the Khalifa is done entirely at night, so it would be acceptable, even it would for sure be acceptable in this matter. Yeah. The Gemara then has a further complication that sometimes you have a situation where you can't do the Khafifa in the quote unquote the perfect time frame. You can't do it with the Yom at night, you can't do either one because you're going to the Mikvah on Shabbos, you're going to the Mikvah on Yom Tov, or even more complicated, you're going to the Mikvah on the second night Yom Tov, or you're going to the Mikvah on a second night Yom Tov. Third night Yantav, in a sense, going in Yantav, going to Shabbos, well, let's say this year, Shavuos, let's say a woman's Lel Tevila is going to be on a Sunday night, second night of Shavuos. So how is she going to pull off the Chafifa? She can't do the Chafifa in Yantav, can't do the Chafifa in Shabbos, what do you do? So there's a whole discussion about that also. So it's not clear, as part of the same Mechleg as Rashi and Shul, it's not clear exactly what the Maskaras of the Devarim is. So basically what comes out to is as follows, that we have a practice, that I'm all right, so we have a practice that whenever you have these convoluted kinds of times, so we do as follows. Let's say the simplest case is Friday night. Regular, plain, simple, normal Friday night. One out of seven times she's going to the mikvah on Friday night. So she goes to the mikvah on Friday night. When is she going to do the chafifa? So obviously she's not going to do the chafifa on Friday night, even according to the shiltas. That's out of the question. It's out of the question. A woman can't be on Shabbos, and she can't come here on Shabbos. All the things that are supposed to be done as part of chafifa, obviously, acts at full Shabbos. So therefore, she must do the chafifa mibiyad yom. That's going to everybody. So according to Rashi, that's not different than any other night. But even according to the Shulchan, who says normally we insist on doing chafifa at night, it would be absurd to do that here. Obviously, it would be impossible to do that here. Therefore, even the Shulchan, in a sense, concedes, agrees to Rashi, that the chafifa has to be mibiyad yom. That's a simple case. So let's say if a woman's going to the mikvah Friday night, or the first night Yom Tov, so then Chavifa is done, maybe Yod Yom, finish everything before she eventually left, and then she tries her best to stay clean, goes to the mikvah and shine. She goes to the mikvah, Friday night, Yom Tov night. This is really part we spoke about last week. Sometimes we let it go a little bit earlier than usual. We mentioned last week that even though a woman's supposed to go to the mikvah at night, that under unique circumstances, sometimes we let it go even with Yod Yom. Those are very, very unique circumstances. But on a regular Friday night, we don't want her to go with Yod Yom. On the other hand, we may be a little bit more lenient as to what's considered to be night. Many of them involve set to practice that we use a much earlier case of Yechavim in calculating the Zman Tevila for a Yom Tov night or a Friday night. Because the Ik Mikra Din, Tzitzk Yechavim, is much earlier than we think it is. Tzitzk Yechavim in our part of the world is somewhere in the 20-25, the minute 30 minutes maximum range. So there are many mikvahs, including the mikvah here, that has the practice that we calculate a much, much shorter zman, much earlier zman. So whereas on the regular weeknights, we usually don't let the women go down to the water until 45 minutes after the, I think the policy is 45 minutes after Shkia. On a Friday night, I think the policy is 25 minutes after Shkia. That 25 minutes is already. It's the same time we have a Meyer here in Shul. So we except for the summer months, we don't wait. But when we wait for about 25 minutes. So that's the Ikrit in Zman of Tzeis Kichavim. For a Leil Tevila on a Friday night, otherwise it's going to be very uncomfortable. By the time she's going to, the husband's going to come home, she's not home yet, it's going to be well again. So we rely on the Ikrit, and that's the practice, not just here. Many mikvahs have that custom. So here when it comes to the chafifa, which is going to the mikvah Friday night, since she can't do the chafifa, we have to left benching, so she has to do it with Yom. As I should have mentioned this, I did mention this, I'm going to remember, about if a woman's going to the mikvah on a Friday night, so she shouldn't really be making early Shabbos. Because if she's making early Shabbos, so she can't go to mikvah until it gets dark, so she's going to eat her Suda Shabbos. The minig is, you're not supposed, once you finish chafifa, you're not supposed to bake yourself dirty, you're supposed to start eating again. So she's going to do chafifa 6 o'clock, and her husband's going to dine early, they're going to have a whole meal, and then 11 o'clock at night she's going to the mikvah, so that's not really right. So the post came right, that if she's going to the mikvah Friday night, it's really preferable that she make, say, a late Shabbos. Not everybody agrees to this. There are some who are a little bit more lenient than this. Maybe Shasa Chach Gobel, say the person was invited out for a meal or something, a simcha is a common kind of a problem. So then one could probably be make it if it's under extenuating circumstances, on the chachila, it's more correct to go to the mikvah on Friday night and then need to sue the ladies. If you have kids, you can do that. So somebody once, some rabbi once told me that a woman called him and asked him, not here, a woman called him and asked him about going to the mikvah on Friday night. So she said, I'm not going to make a late Shabbos. So she came, the woman apparently came to the mikvah, She was in a big rush. She came. It was the night already. The kids were up. We'll have cameras in the house. And there was another person who was in the mikveh at the time who seemed to be very much, much more relaxed. So the two women were talking. So the woman who was all stressed out said, "I had to go run. The kids are jumping off the ceiling. I haven't been from shul yet." And the other woman said, "What's the big deal? You already ate us. I put my kids to sleep already. Everyone's in the shop." So the woman who was nervous, she said, "Why can't I not do that?" So she said, "Oh, yes, my rabbi. My rabbi said you're allowed to do that." So apparently this woman who got the tzaka, she didn't like, called the rabbi. And she said to the rabbi, I won't tell her what, obviously. So she said she calls the rabbi, and she says to the rabbi, "I can't believe you told me that. Said you made me, you ruined my Friday night. You made everyone so crazy in the house. Why didn't you tell me I can go earlier?" So she turns to the rabbi and she says, "I'm never going to ask for Shiloh and Chizdit again." That was the threat. So the rabbi who was telling over the story told the story. Said, "Okay, that was like the end of the world. It was the greatest threat in the world. There's never going to ask for Shiloh again." So anyway, but the bottom line is that the more correct thing to do is to wait until it gets dark to go to the mikveh, and the more correct thing to do is not to eat after the chavifa. But there are, again, under extenuating circumstances, there probably would be grounds to make. So again, a regular woman is going to the mikveh on a regular Friday night, obviously she's not doing the chavifa Friday night, or beyond that, she has to do the Yod Yom. That's the easy case. But it gets more complicated. What about a Motzoi Shabbos? So here she has the option of doing the chavifa Motzoi Shabbos, which she can do maybe Friday afternoon also, or the two nights yantif, three nights yantif. So that becomes even the more complicated. So hopefully, Mr. Shemin, next week we'll continue with these other potential complications in terms of timing the chavifa.